It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, Packed View's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Wooden Hill Shri, and I'm PVSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 22nd, and of course it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We found them boundlessly intriguing. We hope you do too. Brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Leading off, Shri.
Thank you, Peter. And Amazon Live introduces a new shoppable ad-supported channel to Prime Video called Freevee, featuring 24/7 interactive content from celebrities and brands, leveraging its Shop the Show technology to enhance viewer engagement and boost its advertising revenue. At least that's the plan. The channel leverages Amazon's Shop the Show technology to enable viewers to easily purchase content seen on the TV screen via a mobile device. The CPG guys and I are excited to try this out, and we will report back how it performs back here in one of our blogs on the CPG guys. So I look forward to that. Over to you, Peter, for what's going on with Walmart Marketplace.
Thanks, Shri. Walmart Marketplace opens Omni service to auto sellers. Walmart is enabling customers to order eligible tires from Walmart sellers and have them shipped to a local Walmart store for easy installation at their auto care centers. Walmart sellers have added 12,000 unique items, including specialty tires, to provide nearly 40,000 marketplace offers that are installation eligible at 2,300 auto care centers around the country. The expanded tire selection complements Walmart's existing auto services that include accessories and battery services, while giving sellers more access to Walmart's omnichannel customer base. Over to you, Andrea.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Amazon begins offering Dash Carts to other grocers. Amazon has begun offering its Dash Carts to third-party grocers, expanding the checkout technology beyond Amazon grocery banners and Whole Foods market stores, according to a blog post from the company. Amazon introduces Dash Carts to non-Amazon grocery stores, starting with select locations in the Kansas City area. This rollout comes shortly after Amazon ceased its Just Walk Out technology in Amazon Fresh and Whole Foods. Customers using Dash Carts tend to spend 10% more, with over 80% of the transactions from repeat users, highlighting the cart's convenience and efficiency. Over to you, Melissa.
So Heinz has launched a new limited edition barbecue sauce. Heinz and Barbie lovers in Europe are in luck. A limited edition pink vegan mayo with barbecue sauce was launched to celebrate Barbie's 65th anniversary. Mattel and Heinz have unveiled the new Heinz Classic barbecue sauce. It will be available in the UK and Spain initially, and may be available elsewhere in the future. Additionally, there's 5,000 bottles of the new sauce available to purchase online, but they can only be shipped to the UK and Ireland. So for those of you in the US who are curious, you can do what I do and go to TikTok and search pink barbecue sauce, and you will find it.
Thank you, Melissa. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Shri Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in-store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Shri and Peter.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm the Brooklyn Boys of Summer CPG Guy. My name is PVSB, and my domain expertise revolves around the digital shelf, its content, retail, customer data insights, CRM, and loyalty. My co-host, he's the Bronx Bomber CPG Guy and an expert at branding, direct-to-consumer, unified commerce, retail media, and marketplaces. Please join me in welcoming the man who goes by one name, Shri. Shri, how are you doing today?
Doing awesome, Peter. Sunny, peachy day in New York City today. Pleasure to have our special guest that you will announce shortly. And for all our fans, this is opening day of Major League Baseball. The Yankees have played their game. The Dodgers are yet to play their game.
How the Yankees do?
Before he takes a stab, talks about the Yankee results, I do want to remind our audience, if you heard our previous episode, we have a genuine MLB fan who actually thought last Wednesday was opening day. And insisted
not last Wednesday, Sunday. So
whenever it was, that it was the opening day because it was the ESPN game of the week. A true MLB fan.
All right. So what Sheree is trying to disguise is the fact that as of this afternoon, the Yankees have been mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. So we're just going to put that aside and get to the conversation. Before we actually introduce our guest, I want to remind our audience that all of our content, we have some great series on profitability, women's leadership, where Sheree and I were able to help contribute $8,000 to Susan G. Komen Foundation. We had a founder series in the first quarter of this year, an ongoing retailer series. It's all free, so no money, doesn't cost you anything. Just go to cpgguys.com and you can find it there. We have a lot of other content, including a list of our favorite podcasts. Sheree, I'm going to update that because I found a couple more that I think are worthy of our list of superior podcasts. So I'll be updating that next week while I'm doing a little vacation. But in any event, I also want to remind you that our podcast is audience driven, and that means you give us feedback. We try to tailor our guests and our content to that. The best way you can share with us what you'd like to hear about and who you'd like us to have on the podcast, it's pretty simple. Go to ratethispodcast.com/cpgguys. Leave us a rating and review on the Apple platform. That'll be very helpful. So let's get on to the main event, Sheree. Our guest today was introduced to us by previous guest, Andrea Lee at IdeoClick. Our guest spent 9 years working at one of, you know, my favorite grocery retailers, the super regional out of Rochester, Wegmans. And then he went on to build the consumables and fresh business at, what's that Seattle-based company we talk about often? Oh, it's Amazon. Yeah, that's where he was.
What about the name every now and then?
I know.
Rainforest and Brazil.
Comes into the conversation. They're occasionally top of mind. But in any event, more recently, he serves as the CEO and managing partner of Consumer Equity Partners. That's actually one of the parent investors of IdeoClick, and where he actually serves as the chairman of that company. He's here to talk to us today primarily about his capacity as CEO of another company, his portfolio, one that Sheree and I were introduced to by one of his brand clients. This company is called Replenium, which he founded in, I believe, 2013. You can correct me if I'm wrong later, but in previous episodes, you've heard Sheree and me talk about how brands should be investing in retail brand building capabilities, notably this concept of subscribe and save features. Replenium is a different take on this. It's not just about scheduling the repurchase. It takes into account more than that. And we're going to kind of dig in and ask them to educate us about that. Please join us in welcoming to the CPG Guys podcast, Tom Furphy. Tom, welcome. Hope you're doing well. How are you today?
I'm doing great. And thank you guys so much for having me.
All right. Before we get into a couple of questions, first of all, Tom, do you have a baseball preference? Yankees, Dodgers, other?
Oh, you know, I was born in New York, and I grew up a Mets fan.
Okay. No, that's okay.
My New York affiliations were handed down to me by my dad. So I'm not even going to go on the football side of the equation. But
we're both Giants fans.
I unfortunately am not.
Okay. But I can tell you, Mets are okay because it's a blend of the Giants and the Dodgers to make up for the loss. Good. But Sheree and I are actually going to the Sunday, August 15th Dodger game at Citi Field. So totally happy. And one of the things I love about it, you walk right into the lower level behind home base entrance. There is an homage to my personal hero with the big number 42. That's Jackie Robinson.
So, oh, I love that.
Anyhow.
And if weather permits, there will be some live broadcasting of the CPG guys.
I think there will be. From Citi Field. Okay. Tom, before we get into our intense grilling of you, you know we don't do that. Our audience loves to learn while they're listening and dig in. Could you, first of all, share with them where online they can learn more about Replenium? And then after that, if you could give us just a little overview about what you're doing with Consumer Equity Partners.
Absolutely. Well, you can go to replenium.com. And as well, we're on all the social media outlets as well. You know, Facebook, Twitter, and you can even find us showing up on Clubhouse now and then.
Are you on TikTok yet? Because, you know, we're on TikTok.
Not yet TikTok, but
Okay. We'll talk about that after the show, but it's,
all right. That's awesome.
We're also Clubhouse fans. We Clubhouse all the time.
Mission and life beater. Get Dom on TikTok.
I know we got to get him on TikTok. We'll work on that.
Cut me in.
Tell us about Consumer Equity Partners.
Yeah. So Consumer Equity Partners, it's our venture fund, based, in Seattle. Not that it really matters where you're based nowadays. You know, we, as you had mentioned, we got to Amazon in the relatively early days. We were charged with building a CPG e-commerce business on top of a platform that was tuned, you know, to sell books and music and movies and in physical form, by the way. And then we had to you know, create this business of products that you know, are way outside, way far afield of that, but are super important to customers. So after being at Amazon for a number of years, building those businesses, so everything from prestige beauty to health and personal care to grocery, building capabilities like subscribe and save, a lot of the stuff you see in the recommendations engine today, starting and running Amazon Fresh within that as well. Like, we created this, I would call it like a relatively high level of disruption, for lack of a better term, in the industry. And as we were doing that, we said, you know, customers are really digging what we're doing. Partners, like, they like the volume we're giving them, but they hate working with us because, you know, we're so much different than any other retailer, and we're placing all these demands on them that are just, you know, they just weren't used to. And we're creating this kind of new competitive dynamic in retail that we thought, as we looked way forward, could get really interesting, right? If you look forward to a time when Amazon's 20% of retail, you know, what does that mean? So we built an investment thesis off of that. We said, geez, based on that, we're creating great opportunities to help the world work better kind of with and through Amazon. That ultimately became IdeoClick. And then we said, you know, there's also real investability around helping the world either compete with Amazon if you're a retailer, or hedge against reliance on Amazon if you're a brand. So, you know, competing against Amazon as a retailer, businesses like BevyUp that we sold to Nordstrom, businesses like Replenium, which is an auto replenishment platform for the world outside of Amazon, you know, that helps retailers compete. And both of those companies and some other things we're spinning up, you know, really help brands go to market in new ways, both direct to consumers and through, you know, and through and in conjunction with retailers. So we have an investment thesis around those areas, you know, things that are going to be disrupted around retail, some disruption in supply chain, things like health, self-care, you know, digital marketing, you know, those kinds of areas. And so that's our investment vehicle. It's was originally funded out of our Amazon returns. And then we've since brought in additional outside investors as well.
That is very helpful, Tom. Thank you for that. And also thank you for allowing us to dispense with the standard Amazon 6-page brief in preparation for this podcast. Sri and I always, we never get past page 2. It's just too frustrating for us. It's probably why we don't work at Amazon, but in any event.
Actually, it's right. The low PowerPoint Microsoft Word culture, and we have lived true to that expectation for you, Tom.
Nice.
All right, so let's get to the questions. Why are retailer-based subscription services so desirable for consumers? Are there specific types of products that lend more favorably to this model? Is there something about the experience of purchasing into a subscription that pleases shoppers? What are your thoughts on this?
You know, that's a really good question. And, you know, I will say when we originally built Subscribe and Save at Amazon, the motivator for building it was we knew at Amazon we couldn't have a complete assortment, right? We couldn't be a complete solution for any of our customers. We also couldn't be a complete solution for any of our brand partners because we couldn't carry all their products. So, okay, so we have these two incompletes in our score. So how are we going to win, right? And we said, well, you know, we probably can build into the platform the capability for folks to put the stuff they get on a regular basis, you know, on a repeat purchase cycle, so they can set it and forget it. So it was a complete, we didn't do any consumer research or anything. It was just kind of our gut feeling. And so we built that capability, and, you know, obviously it took off and it did really well. And I think we learned some things along the way with that. We learned that customers that are loyal to a product love to do that because they just love to not have to worry about running out of stock. They want to know they're getting a good value on it. And they want to know that the retailer is taking care of it for them. It's almost like when you put something on bill pay, right? You're not doing it necessarily to save money. You're doing it just because you don't want the hassle of having to worry about it, right? And, you know, we thought when, you know, offering a discount on the product that, you know, that was going to be why customers are doing it, because they get this great deal on it. And, you know, they're going to sign up for the deal. And that probably got some customers into it at first. But as we did consumer research on it after we had launched it, and over the years since, you know, we found out that customers really were doing it for the convenience over the value. So I think it's really a convenience play. It's taking that burden off of the to-do list of the customer. The fewer things they can have on their active shopping list, frankly, for them, the better, right? They'd rather have to worry about fewer things. So that, you know, that fits that need really well. I will say that we learned a lot about that over time, as far as like which categories would work well for this, you know, to your question. The initial categories that took off were the ones you'd expect, you know, vitamin supplements, baby care, you know, any kind of regular use regimen product, like a lot of personal care products, even a bunch of beauty products that tend to be replenishment items. You know, once you're past discovery and you find that item that you like on a regular basis, that works well in subscribe and save. But we also were surprised at some of the kind of obscure products that folks would put on it. You know, if you found a retailer that carried, you know, the 42nd flavor of Jell-O that your family just really loves, you know, you'll buy a 6-pack of that, you know, every couple months. And so, you know, we were pretty generous in the amount of our assortment that we lit up at Amazon in the program. And, you know, I will say that, you know, the range of categories that are being purchased is fairly broad, much broader than you'd expect.
Retailers have traditionally been focused on preset, systematic reordering of a product. Variables that have gone into the mix classically are historicals, last year's seasonality, but they don't really vary year over year. And then you look at COVID. One of the hardest things we say on the show that people are going to find in 2021 and 22 is actually planning. Because looking at historicals and anniversarying is a foreign concept at this stage. In your estimation, what's the better model? And is it not truly what the consumer needs, just systematic reordering? Like, what's missing to do the right thing?
You know, traditional subscription platforms are architected in what we would call that around the product. So at its core, it's a product architecture. It is, you know, I'm Sri, I pick this product that I want on a regular basis, and maybe you can recommend to me, you know, the most common, you know, repeat cycle of that. You know, maybe I'll know as a customer, yeah, this is an every 2 week or an every 6 week. Maybe I'll know that. I usually won't quite know it right, but I'll put that product on that cycle. And then that product will be, you know, sent to me on that predetermined regimen or predetermined interval. And then if I end up that's too slow or too fast, I have to go in and adjust that. And that ends up causing something that we called at Amazon and since subscription fatigue, right? So having to, you know, actively manage your inventory level at home and go in on a SKU by SKU basis and manage that is tedious. If you have a baby in a size 1 diaper, the baby's going to grow. You know what they're going to need next? Size 2. Well, on Amazon, you know what you have to do? You have to go in and cancel your size 1 product subscription and go sign up for a size 2 product subscription, right? Or what if, you know, there's a nutrition bar that you like and you want to toggle between a couple different flavors? All right, well, at Amazon, you'd have to set one up, you know, like every other month, and then another one up every other month and manage those back and forth. So there's a fundamental flaw in traditional subscription around being what I would say kind of product architected. When we thought about how to approach auto replenishment, you know, we thought about it being what we call solution architected, right? So consumers solve needs, right? Shoppers are looking to have needs solved. And as a mom, if I have a diapering need, and I pick the brand of diaper and the style of diaper within that brand that I like, I want to pick that and be good. And I want the system to at least suggest to me when it's time to switch to size 2, and be able to easily switch within that and have it just go from size 1 to size 2 to size 3. or if I want to switch between flavors, right, be able to easily do that, or between scents of deodorant, you know, I want to be able to do that. And this doesn't sound like necessarily all that exciting, but it's that the mundaneness of the repeat purchase, you know, that can, one of those things that can lead to subscription fatigue, that when we think about auto replenishment and what that means versus subscription, that's a key differentiator. One of the key differences between the two, between traditional product subscription and auto replenishment, is basically that auto replenishment, we like to say, takes the good parts of the utility of product subscription, adds the element of machine learning to that, right? Because our machine learning is so much stronger today than it was 15 years ago when we launched Subscribe and Save, right? And we have a lot more data, and we're a lot more sophisticated in how we can mine that data. So if we can inform, you know, the platform and inform the customer's decision process with artificial intelligence, with machine learning, we could be a lot better at recommending replenishment intervals, right, like items to go with that. And then we give customers really good visibility tools and the ability to kind of, you know, modify those replenishments over time. That's all super important. And then, you know, auto replenishment also, one of the cool things with that is, you know, on the retail side, it doesn't have to exist outside of the traditional basket either. It can actually drive tendering within the basket so that you don't have to manage, you know, multiple purchase flows as a customer.
Your CTO, Umair Bashir, also came from Amazon, worked on Subscribe and Save, and you kind of referenced it a second ago, but can you dig a little deeper into how you are leveraging machine learning to enable this capability that, as you described, prevents the consumer from reaching subscription fatigue? Because I'll tell you something, I'm still sitting on about 6 years of Dollar Shave Club razors that I'm probably never going to get rid of. But I'd love to know how you're trying to solve this issue with machine learning.
Well, if you need to offload any of that inventory, just let me know. I can always use more horsepower. And you mentioned that we started the company in 2013. Here we are in 2021, and our big retail launches are actually just happening now. So what the heck we've been doing for 8 years? Well, for the majority of those 8 years was architecting the platform. And a key part of the platform architecture is this introduction of machine learning into the product. So we've been able to build some pretty amazing data sets and machine learning capabilities on top of the data sets, with a source being one of the major data providers, you know, household name, gave us a set of like 70 million consumer transactions. We took those consumer transactions and, you know, we've mined them and we've learned a lot from them. So our machine learning knows things like, based on the cubic centimeters of toilet paper consumed, how many ounces of toothpaste should be consumed, right? Because, you know, the one is a proxy for the size of household and the other numbers of mouths in the household further up the supply chain. Those are relative numbers, right? So we use machine learning in a few different ways. And Umair Bashir, he led two key engineering teams at Amazon. He led the Subscribe and Save team, but he also led the, I think we called it accessorization, which was a recommending of additional products based on what you also bought, right? Which we've all bought things off of that, off of Umair's recommendations. So he led both of those at Amazon. So I started working with Umair back, you know, forever ago at Amazon. So when the opportunity to bring Replenium to market came to fruition, Umair was, you know, one of the very first people we called to bring in to work on this. So we've been able to take this machine learning and based on that, we can do two things for customers. One, we can recommend products to you as a customer based on other things you've bought, other things customers like you have bought, and we can identify in the the range of products you know you should be buying into your home, we can identify where there are holes. So we recommend products based on those holes. Then we can also take our machine learning and apply consumption machine learning to that and be able to recommend appropriate intervals based on your household. They're never perfect, but they're usually close enough that you can get them, you know, you can lower the barrier of adoption to this and then lower the maintenance barrier or maintenance burden on customers once you do that. So the data sets that we use this aggregated data set that we started with. We use retailers' aggregated data. And as you guys both well know, retailers have very, very much varied sophistication in the type of data they have and their ability to mine that data. But we can leverage. So, and if the retailer is doing some great machine learning in that, awesome. We'll take the output of that. We don't need to layer too much of ours on top of that. We take specific customer trailing data as well. So when you authenticate, you know, you're on the retailer site or you're on the brand site and you authenticate, we can, you know, we'll through a token be able to see your trailing purchase history if the retailer or brand makes that available. And then we can make recommendations based on that. And then finally, we also incorporate brand data because a lot of brands have pretty good data on their side as far as what they expect consumption rates of their products to be. Right. And so we're able to kind of take those all together and develop some pretty sophisticated and effective recommendations for folks and helping them load up the replenishment baskets.
In a previous question, you talked about machine learning and artificial intelligence. What's machine learning and artificial intelligence telling you about the world of 1P, first party? First, especially when it comes to brands wanting to create first party relationships with consumers. Replenishable goods, first party relationships, they almost seem like a magnet attracting each other. But what's the major value proposition for a brand to do this when they may be at like 20,000 store doors plus in the United States? And why would they sign up for a Replenium type replenishable solution when the consumer has been trained over the course of history? I can just go back to the existing brick and mortar store and pick it up. And now I can click on Amazon.
Well, we want to appeal to the brand on a few different dimensions. One, we fully believe that brands need to establish direct relationships with their end customers. Retailers are a necessary partner in go-to-market, for sure, because they're great aggregators of demand. They provide a good service for the end customer, provided they provide the service well. You know, in theory, they should provide a really good service for the end customer. So there's value, to the customer and the retailer's participation in that. But that said, you know, especially with the ability to establish digital connections with your end customers as a brand, with your ability to gather data from that, leverage that data to market back directly to those customers, you should be able to have that direct relationship and to be able to leverage that. We see, and you guys know this well, I think most brands agree that they would like to do more of that, and I think what ends up potentially getting in the way of, you know, like full DTC e-commerce for a lot of brands is just the economics and the ability to, you know, create a meaningfully sized basket out of a brand specific or even a manufacturer specific product portfolio, where those economics work. It provides the right shopping experience for the customer, the right repeat purchase value proposition, you know, all that. And some brands will figure that out and are figuring it out, and it's great. Other brands may never get there just because of the physics and the economics involved. What we really believe in is leverage the heck out of those digital connections, right? If you're a brand with an app, if you're a brand with a website, and you're getting customers in there engaging with your products, learning about them, and they're immersed in this information, give them a replenishment option there. So let them, you know, if I'm a diaper brand and I have a new mom, and those sites have crazy traffic, right? Even if I'm a cereal brand and, you know, it's a new mom, trying to figure out either how to diaper my kids or how to feed my kids breakfast. Why not leverage that interaction to say, hey, you can put, you know, you can get on a regimen of this stuff and just set it and never have to worry about it. You can rotate through, you know, four different flavors of cereal. You know, you can go on the diaper regimen and we're going to move you through the sizes. You can engage in all that directly on the brand property. And then if you can handle that as a brand, you can service the DTC demand. If not, you can have that demand. And this is one of the cool things we enable at Replenium. We call it brand to retailer, where you can take that, do that discovery, set up the replenishment regimen, and then drop it down into your retailer replenishment basket. So now the brand gets full visibility and relationship with you as a customer. The retailer is servicing it. You're getting all the data back as the brand. So is true. That's kind of a true symbiotic relationship there between brand and retailer. And we're really bullish on that. And then, you know, there'll be maybe other like customers like that shopper, and maybe they're shopping directly at the retailer. Well, great. You know, put your replenishment, affect your replenishments down there at the retailer, but let's share that data back with the manufacturer. So in turn, we can identify even more items to replenish, you know, for that customer. So we think there's a real opportunity to break through and to create some real new, deeper levels of partnering between brands and retailers with this.
It's been my experience selling in SaaS solutions, in particular into entities, that one of, if not the biggest obstacle, is implementation, getting the resources, deploying the resources, having them prepared to do it. So what should retailers and brands that work with you expect from an integration and timing and effort to get a solution up and running? And how, if at all, do you help them on that journey to make it less painful?
I appreciate that question, because we just live it every day. On the brand side, you know, we've done a really good job. We have a very simple SDK that the brand can, you know, basically program against, drop it into their site. And it's experience that, as long as they have commerce on their site, or as long as they don't even need commerce, as long as they display some semblance of a PDP, as long as they have that, and we can put a replenish widget near a product, then that's pretty easy to do. That is so easy. That could be done literally in the matter of just a few days. What we do find is that the brand and agency relationship tends to be a little complex. And so agencies can sometimes try to make it a little more difficult than it needs to be. Particularly kind of web and design agencies can make it a little more difficult, but it's super fast. Brands can implement in a matter of days. On the retail side, it's also very similar in that if you want to basically, you know, use the out-of-the-box solution, we're talking to one of the very largest retailers today in the world. And they're actually looking at potentially just using our base experience and creating their own section of their website, you know, which is not necessarily ideal, because you at least got to market people over to that section to go find the replenishment items, you know, not ideal, but we can implement that in like 30 days with a retailer. So, you know, a retailer may say, yeah, I'll start with that so I can get it in, start getting some proof, getting some data going, and then I'll do the full deal. And our full deal implementation is, we're a set of microservices that basically, if you, you know, you can build all the front end experiences for the customer, right? So, you know, whether it's, you know, search or browse results, whether it's, you know, product detail pages, whether it's special sections on the site, promotion sections, whether it's even in the cart, you can add, you know, replenishment widgets next to those. Once you click the replenishment widget, everything behind that is ours, up until you get to slot selection and whatnot for logistics. And then we need to interact and integrate back there. So, and then we ultimately merge into the cart. So even the most complex integrations, you probably talk about 90 days for a retailer, you know, and that's with, you know, having a few, you know, call it, depending on your complexity, 3 to 10 internal dev heads spending time on it during those 3 months. So we recommend start simple, just get it in, get some reps, get your customers using it, then leverage the data to get, you know, get a little bit more sophisticated in how you implement it.
You previously told us about how it is to partner with Replenium and actually get the solution implemented with the retailer and for the benefit of a brand. I'm going to jump into the world of the benefits. But before I do that, for the benefit of our audience, it is the seventh inning stretch down in Colorado, and the Dodgers are well on their way to getting mathematically eliminated, as Peter Bond correctly predicted at the beginning of the show. So why don't we jump right into the benefits? And
what did Yogi say? It ain't over till it's over.
Seventh inning stretch. And the question is a straightforward one, Tom, which is, you know, there's implementation and there's outcomes and return on investment. So whether you're a brand or a retailer, what's the type of return on investment that you're already starting to see in the marketplace out there with implementations you've done, full SDK or not? And is it data? Is it insights? I mean, the solution seems pretty straightforward to me as let's go do it as opposed to procrastinating way too much. Mm-hmm. Is it customer experience?
So we built it to be all of the above. So I'll just some stats that we're seeing in the live implementations today. And I will say that these far surpassed what we had expected. So we're seeing average items preloaded into a cart to the tune of about $80 worth. Now this is at retail, right? So you've got, $80 worth of stuff where the system has said, hey, Peter, on Monday, your replenishments are going to be ready to be picked up at store 123. Come on in, add your order and then come on in Monday and pick it up. And then you can go in, review your replenishments. You might want to pull a couple things out, push a couple things in. But you're starting with $80 in that basket and then even adding to it from there. So we're seeing really good basket size. We're seeing between a 10 and 20% increase in customer value over time, right? So, and that's coming from higher frequency, right? Because the replenishment items, they basically, they kind of work for you, right? And they go and they tell the shopper, hey, it's time to replenish. Here's your basket, add to it. So the cadence of items actually create the shopping occasion to happen a little bit closer together than it would have otherwise. And then of course you get larger baskets. We're seeing the average replenishment increment. So time between, the set time between deliveries at the item level, is it about 17 days on average? So you think about Amazon where your shortest duration is a month. They're bigger packs, right? But when we're working at retailers that are full basket retailers, average is 17 days. So 2.5 weeks, it's crazy at the item level. And so, if you have a lot of items on replenishment, you're probably doing a replenishment basket for sure less than every couple of weeks. So that drives a nice number there. The range of categories that we're seeing on the program in these full basket retailers, we know traditional center store, the stuff that Amazon would sell, packaged grocery, health and personal care, beauty. Of course, those things make sense, household. But we're seeing things like the packaged deli case, the dairy case, frozen. Lots of those perimeter categories are being introduced to this. So, that's kind of a nice surprise for us. And that's, I think, part of why we're seeing $80, preloaded into baskets. So, there's all those kind of transactional benefits. So, the retailer gets higher customer value, good repeat basket size, helps your e-commerce economics, all around, to that extent. For the brands, they get all the data from these transactions. Brands do fund this as well. I mean, it's not a free ride for the brands. Usually the brands are funding a customer discount of some sort. It doesn't have to be deep though. 5 points usually gets it done. So some level of customer discount, good use of that discount money, by the way, because it's going to your loyal customers. And then usually some capability fee, a few points to administer the program. But, it's less costly than administering a coupon or, most any other fee for a retailer program. And in return for that, the brands get, access to these customers. They get, kind of locked in loyalty, to their brands from their loyal customers, so something that they have to continually fight for, they get actually done and they get an annuity return on that, right? So yeah, you're spending a little bit of marketing money up front promoting the program, but most of that money is going right to the customers that are using it the most, the end consumer that's using it the most. You also as a brand then have marketing access to those customers, right? So, if a customer is a loyal fan of a certain flavor or brand of cereal, and you have a new product coming out, you can go right to those customers and introduce that product, and you've got kind of a ready market for those. So for the brand, it's really, it's loyalty, it's ROI on marketing dollars that we think, is pretty tough marketing spend to beat. And then that's a kind of stuff that's executed at retail. And then if you're doing it on the brand site, you know, it's just better return on, because you're paying for traffic to come to your brand site. You're paying to maintain those digital properties and keep folks engaged. This is a great way to monetize that engagement.
The pandemic has brought incredible growth to e-commerce for consumables, and it's also brought about the rise of demand aggregators like Instacart. So from that demand perspective, if brands either miss the opportunity to build D2C relationships with consumers, is the race just beginning, or is it somewhere in between?
So I have always felt like now is the time. You know, I remember being, you know, the very early Amazon back in 05, you know, going around at manufacturers' headquarters and convincing manufacturers that this internet thing is really going to be something. And, you know, grocery e-commerce, there's a future here. And by the way, at Amazon, we have 40 million customers. That's what we had at the time, that we think we can sell this to. And I know you've all had a tough experience with Webvan and others before, but we're really going to help you guys get back, you know, directly in connection with your customers. And we can bypass all that traditional friction that, you know, retailers tend to throw up to get in the way. So, you know, I felt like then was the time, and we're 16 years later now. And I still feel like now is the time. I think brands have certainly done a lot toward that. I don't think they've missed the bus. I think that, yes, for sure, during the pandemic, I think that the retail side, including the demand aggregators, you know, moved several years forward in their growth cycle. To some degree, that's really good because now all these platforms are a lot more valuable to the brands, right? You know, when Instacart was nascent, it wasn't necessarily that valuable of a platform for the brands. You know, when Kroger's platform was nascent, it itself wasn't that valuable for the brands. Any retailer, Albertsons, you know, Walmart, everybody. Heck, even Amazon, when it was early, wasn't really that valuable to the brand. But we've seen, you know, the retailers have really served to wake up the customers to the importance of this digital connection. And so I think that brands are at a really good spot now that, you know, if they're creating their DTC strategies where I'm going to engage directly on my properties, if I want to push these consumer-facing platforms, you know, to best align with my objectives, I think everybody stands to win in that, right? I think a well-aligned retail platform that serves its customers well, that brands are participating in that messaging, in that value that's delivered to customers, and we can share data back and forth through that. Maybe that's still utopian. To me, it doesn't feel that utopian, and it feels like we're kind of right there now. So I don't think anybody's missed the boat at all yet, but I do think the rest of 21 and 22 is going to be a significant time of transition and kind of like land grab in this area.
Now I'm going to go to a question that I've waited in this interview to ask one of the originators of groceries delivery at Amazon and grocery shopping at Amazon. And that is, in the recent past, Peter and I have observed 11 Amazon Fresh grocery stores have popped up. Brick and mortar, as brick and mortar as the definition of brick and mortar has been done over a century. Is that the future of Amazon grocery? We'd love your prediction and your rank punditry on this.
So, you know, it sounds cliche and you hear Brian Olsavsky, Amazon CFO, or you hear Jeff B, or you'll hear Amazon executives always talking about, right, we focus on the customer and we innovate on their behalf. And that's exactly what they're doing in this space, right? They want to solve as many of their customer needs as well as they can. And, you know, the grocery and food shopping needs of their customers is a very important, not problem or challenge, but a very important element of their daily lives. You know, we started with base package grocery to the best we could do it within the platform. We then added subscribe and save to help a little more. You know, we started the first version of Amazon Fresh to It looked an awful lot like a traditional, you know, route-based local grocery delivery service. We learned a lot doing that. You saw some iterations of that with pickup. You saw that evolve to Prime Now. You saw Amazon acquire Whole Foods back a handful of years ago now. You know, and I think each time they've made these different moves, it's not as a result of the prior move failing. It's a result of the prior move, you know, not quite getting it all the way done. And I think, you know, that they clearly they learned a lot with the Whole Foods acquisition. You know, they're not a company to just take on an asset like that and not do anything with it. So they've been actively learning from that. I think that they've learned through that, through their efforts in Fresh, that, you know, a store-based environment or a hyper-local environment for a grocery shopping experience and or utility is important, right? So at a minimum, having that inventory really close to customers to distribute to them is important. And if that's in the form of a store, and that store can provide an effective solution for some portion of their needs, then I think that that's important for them to do. So, you know, they have a lot of Prime customers. They're looking to serve their Prime customers in many ways. And, you know, I think to me, it seems pretty clear that they've determined that there is an opportunity in a physical grocery format that's not Whole Foods, right? That is smaller, that is simpler, you know, can be really effective. And those are not going to be in far-flung areas and big, you know, big footprint formats. Those are going to be very local, very proximate to their customers, right? Amazon's very adept at having inventory positioned close to their customers so they can be responsive to their needs. This is just the way they do that with goods in these categories. So I think you will see lots and lots and lots more of these formats. Will they continue to be exactly as they are now? I don't know. I mean, my sense is Amazon's going to continue to learn. They're not afraid to change and try new things. When things aren't working, they're not afraid to stop. So I think store formats, though, are going to be, in this category particularly, is going to be a pretty important element of the service offering for Amazon going forward.
Inventory proximate to their customers. What a great reason to buy one of the front store non-pharmacy businesses of two major national retailers that come to mind. Anyhow, that's just my 1/50th of a dollar. I want to remind our audience that all of our content is available to you. It doesn't cost you a dime. Just go to cpgguys.com. And we'd also love you to follow us on LinkedIn. If you're on LinkedIn, I hope you are, because we're kind of a B2B podcast. Just go on to LinkedIn and enter in the CPG guys or CPG guys. You'll find us there. Click follow. Reason, we publish a lot of content and a lot of content that we think you'll find interesting. Links to our podcast, articles that we publish, we think are interesting. All of our announcements are there. Follow it. It's pretty useful. We'd love to have you. I think by the time this airs, we'll have already passed 5,000 followers of our LinkedIn page, and we are very grateful for that. So we're going to put a link in the liner notes of that podcast. Just using the term liner notes dates me. But we're going to put in a link to Replenium and also Tom's LinkedIn profile so you can find out more about him. Tom, thank you so much for joining us and having this conversation. It was really enlightening to me. Sri already knows all this stuff, but I'm sure he learned one or two things himself. But thank you both for
having me.
Hey, Sri, I think you may be right about the Dodgers winning the day today. You know what? I'll rescind my mathematical elimination of the Yankees if you reach detente with me as well, and we'll live to fight another day. But thank you for
history in the making. Mr. Bond rescinded a word called mathematical elimination of the Yankees. That's because, why don't we update the audience? The score is 4-8 after 7. We can't thank you enough for joining us.
My pleasure.
All right, everyone. Thank you. And we look forward to having you join us for the next episode of the CPG Guys. Bye.
content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.